hello, everyone. This is Luke Harrelly, and you're listening to the Divided Kingdom radio show. If you'd like to go to our website, it's DividedKingdomRadio.com. You can read some essays. You can get other information. You can find out when the program's on. Basically, it's on shortwave, Thursday evenings, at a frequency of 4.840 at 8 p.m. Eastern Time. Saturday mornings, that show repeats at 7.490 megahertz at 8 a.m. That's Saturday morning, again, Eastern Time. And it's on several other venues, Global Star Radio. It's on KingdomStarRadio.com. And KStarTalkRadio.com. We still have a few of our books. I still have a few of those that have not been sent out. I sent out one this week to a listener who wanted one. If you'd like to get a copy of our book, or if you'd be kind enough to make a little donation to help us out, just write to me, Lou Caverly, spelled C-A-V-E-R-L-Y, Post Office Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609. And I'll give that address a little later if you didn't have a pen or pencil handy. Well, a couple months ago, I guess it's maybe 6 to 8 weeks now, I bought a new car. My old car had 370,000 miles on it. And it was beginning to make some noises in the engine, and I thought to myself, this is going to leave me stranded if I don't get something different. So I was fortunate to get a good deal on a little Hyundai. And the reason I bring this up is here it is all this time later, and I still have the temporary tags on, temporary number plates. The Motor Vehicle Administration for Maryland has not sent out the permanent plates yet. And I think the expiration date on the temporary ones is this week. Now, I'm assuming if I go to the dealership, I could probably get another set of temporary plates. But what have they been doing all this time? You know, everything is sent electronically now. They had all the information at least 7 weeks ago. And that leads me into the next topic. And I read a little bit about this last week. I think it was last week. It might have been the week before. The Real ID. Now, this is from Fox News by Breanne DePish, I think is how you would pronounce her name. And I don't have a date here, but I got this past week, so it's sometime around the 1st of May. Might even have been the 1st. And the headline says, Real ID renews America's age-old dread of the DMV. Now, if you're from Massachusetts, it used to be called the Registry of Motor Vehicles. I don't know if that title has changed. But some states it's DMV, Department of Motor Vehicles. Some states it's MVA, Motor Vehicle Administration. But whatever the name, it says a stricter identity verification requirement for U.S. residents is slated to take force next week. Well, that's this coming week, after 20 years of delay. And for many, the law will require a visit to one of the nation's most notorious, time-honored places of dread, the Department of Motor Vehicles. Well, I'll vouch for that, and let me say right off the bat, the ladies in the Maryland Department of Motor Vehicles, or MVA, have been unfailingly pleasant. I certainly find no fault with them. They've been helpful. They've been courteous. But are the delays, my goodness, yes. I've sometimes waited, oh, I don't know, 45 minutes, maybe an hour in line. You know, you get a little, at least in Maryland, you get a little tag of some kind with a code number. And when your turn comes, you can go up to the window and get your business done, whether it be registering a vehicle, getting a driver's license for the first time, getting a driver's license renewed, or whatever the case may be. But this is the case with this situation. Now, here for a long time, they've been saying you must have a driver's license or other identification that meets the standards for this real ID business. Well, here it is. The time has come, and are they ready for it? No. So let's read on. Despite the different names, each of these state-run facilities serves the same purpose: to license drivers and issue identification cards to residents living in the state. They share the same wait times and inspire the same feelings of burden and loathing. But for individuals in some states, things are about to get a lot worse fast. Now, I can't show you a picture, but there was a good picture, and the caption says, "People waiting in line at the Department of Motor Vehicles in San Francisco on May 11th, 2020. Well, now here, it's May of 2025. And it says, on May 7th, that's this week, all U.S. residents will be required to show a real ID compliant, that's in quotes, real ID compliant form of identification to board any flights, including international and domestic travel, or to enter any federal buildings in compliance with a long-stalled federal law passed by Congress in 2005. And that was probably as a result of the 9/11 attacks, I would imagine, although, because they were 2001, 4 years before that, so I may be not accurate about that. And I'm going to have a little bit to say about 9/11. We thought that was a thing of the distant past, but no, there's more news on that. And I had given you a little bit of that last week, but I'll give you some more in a few minutes. A real ID is a state-issued driver's license or state-issued identification card that meets certain federal standards, and it requires individuals to provide additional documentation, such as several documents proving current state residency, a utility agreement and lease, for example, as well as a certified birth certificate, among other things. Real IDs are now issued by all state DMVs or BMVs or HSMVs, whatever the initials may be, in anticipation of the fast-approaching enforcement date. Real ID-compliant ID cards and licenses are marked with a star or other symbol in the right-hand corner, and some states, including Texas and Florida, have been issuing them for years. And I'll interject, I think that my driver's license for Maryland fits the bill, although I'm not entirely sure, but since I'm not going to do any traveling in the near future that I'm aware of, not by plane anyway, I'm not too worried about it, but I guess I'll have to check on that sometime. Reading on now, but because DMVs are operated at a state and not federal level, compliance with the tighter verification standards has until recently been optional. That's prompted a patchwork of compliance across the U.S. and a recent frenzied panic from residents in states whose DMVs have not met the real ID standards. In the final days before the new law takes effect, some U.S. residents are learning for the first time to their horror that their IDs are not up to snuff. That's prompted a surge of last-minute appointments in some states as drivers frantically look to obtain these new IDs. In others, appointments are nearly impossible to come by. Now, we mentioned some of this, I think, last week. New Jersey is notorious. New Jersey, for example, currently has no appointments available at any of its DMV facilities in the whole state. That could be a major problem for travelers in the Garden State, whose real ID compliance is the lowest in the country at 17% last month, according to data compiled by CBS News. Other nearby states are reporting similar compliance rates, with Pennsylvania at only 26% compliance, New York with 43%, which is, of course, less than half of all residents living in the state. For individuals in these states, the real ID compliance standards amount to what could be a travel nightmare, especially ahead of the summer holiday season when airports brace for a sharp uptick in traffic. As of January 2024, just 56% of state-issued driver's licenses and identification cards were compliant with the new real ID requirements, according to DHS estimates. It's unclear how much that percentage has changed in the last year. And here we have a quote. DHS anticipates that a significant number of individuals seeking to use their DL/W driver's license/ID for a real ID official purposes on and after May 7, 2025 may not have a compliant DL ID, that's driver's license ID card, the agency said in a memo last September. Now, in January, DHS issued a slightly more optimistic projection, anticipating that by May 7th, around 66% of U.S. ID holders would have the new legally required ID. Well, I'll just interject. As a math teacher, a little fast math shows a third of the country doesn't have it. Reading on, in Kentucky, a group of state lawmakers, led by Senate Transportation Committee Chair Jimmy Higdon, Republican of Lebanon, urged DHS Secretary Kristi Noem to delay the real ID enforcement date, citing, quote, growing concerns, unquote, from state residents who have been unable to access driver's license services due to, quote, limited appointment availability and long lines for walk-ins, unquote. And it gives a few other examples. Jumping down now, and the problem persists in other states as well. CBS News found in its April survey that at least 17 states have compliance rates below 50%, with 30 states at less than 70%. So at least a quarter, in those states, at least a fourth of the people do not have those special licenses. And that's the way it is as of the time that I'm taping this. Well, it seems to me that my program will be going out over the airwaves on Thursday. Now, what's the date? Let me see now. I believe that's the 8th. So as you hear this, the deadline has already passed. So you'll want to find out, if you have any plans to travel, just what the regulations are. Have they postponed the requirement, or is it still being enforced strictly? Time to find out. And if you have to go to any federal buildings for any reason, same thing. You'll have to find out about that ID. Okay, moving to another topic, Slay News. And that, by the way, again, was Fox News. I don't have a date for that one I just read, but it was Fox News, and the title was Real ID Renews America's Age-Old Dread, or the DMV. Now, moving on to Slay News. Dozens of Democrats have sided with the Republicans in a vote to block a waiver pushed through by former President Joe Biden during his final days in office. And this is by Frank Bergman, May 1st of 2025. Biden's 11th-hour rule cleared a path for California to enact Democrat Governor Gavin Newsom's full ban on gas cars by 2035, 10 years from now. 35 House Democrats have now joined with Republicans in rebuking Biden's waiver. A Republican resolution aimed at repealing the Biden-era Environmental Protection Agency move passed by a 246 to 164 vote on Thursday morning. Notably, two California House Democrats were among the 35 who voted to rescind their own state's clean energy waiver. Representative Lou Correa, Democrat of California, and George Whitesides, also Democrat of California, both voted against the waiver, that is, against Biden's action. I don't quite understand what this refers to when they say a waiver, but they're siding with the Republicans is the long and short of it. And they mentioned some other names also who were voting to repudiate this thing by Biden. Well, jumping down a little bit, House Republican, House Majority Leader, who is a Republican, Steve Scalise of Louisiana, said of the California waiver, quote, this radical measure bans the sale of gas-powered vehicles, forcing electric vehicles on the American people and taking away consumer choice. Americans should choose which car best suits their needs and the needs of their family, not the government, Scalise added. And House Majority Whip Tom Emmer, Republican of Minnesota, said, quote, there is no reason the radical climate policies of California should regulate the entire American population and rob every American of consumer choice. And he went on to say, House Republicans are righting yet another wrong done by the Biden administration and returning basic freedom to choose whatever car you want, returning that to the American people. And those are the words, again, of House Majority Whip Tom Emmer. Representative John Joyce from Pennsylvania, also Republican, Vice Chair of the House Energy and Commerce Committee, introduced a resolution of disapproval last month. The resolution targets a Biden administration-era waiver granted to California that would help the state realize its goal of a full ban on the sale of new gas cars by 2035. Skipping down a little bit, Biden's EPA approved the waiver in December 2024, just over a month before he left office. The waiver was granted despite concerns raised by major automakers earlier that year about the feasibility of California's goals. However, state officials pushing the plan have insisted it was critical to, quote, save the planet from climate change, unquote. At the time, the Biden administration argued the waiver amounted to an order rather than a regulatory rule, meaning it would not be subject to congressional review. However, it has been the subject of a standoff between the Trump administration and the federal bureaucracy since then. And the move paved the way, that is, this latest move paved the way for a potential repeal under the GOP-controlled House and Senate. However, the Government Accountability Office said in March that California's waiver is not subject to the Congressional Review Act. So we'll see that where that goes. I've got my gas car. Hopefully it'll last a while. Okay, now switching gears again. From LifeSite News, bombshell HHS report confirms the irreversible harm caused by child gender transitions. This was by Jonathan Van Maren, Thursday, May 1st, 2025. The one I just read, by the way, is by Slay News, May 1st, 2025. The U.S. Department of Health and Human Services published a, this is its title, Comprehensive Review of Medical Interventions for Children and Adolescents with Gender Dysphoria, unquote, on May 1st. And it is a devastating indictment of the so-called gender-affirming care model that has harmed thousands of minors over the past decade. According to the executive summary, the review, quote, highlights a growing body of evidence pointing to significant risks, including irreversible harm such as infertility, while finding very weak evidence of benefit, and that this weakness has been a consistent finding of systematic reviews of evidence around the world, unquote. President Donald Trump has stated that the review would be forthcoming when he signed the, quote, Protecting Children from Chemical and Surgical Mutilation, unquote, executive order on January 28th. And NIH director, Dr. J. Bhattacharya, stated, quote, our duty is to protect our nation's children, not expose them to unproven and irreversible medical interventions. We must follow the gold standard of science, not activist agendas, unquote. Contributors to the review represented a wide range of political viewpoints that included medical doctors, medical ethicists, and a methodologist. The conclusion of the review, which analyzed existing literature, was clear. Quote, now I take that back. The quote doesn't begin just yet. The science and accumulated evidence do not support the use of, here's the quote, medical intervention, unquote. And that includes puberty blockers, cross-sex hormones, and surgeries to address gender dysphoria in the young. The executive summary notes that, quote, health authorities in a number of countries have imposed restrictions, and that those included the United Kingdom. Nevertheless, the gender-affirming model of care includes irreversible endocrine and surgical interventions on minors with no physical pathology. These interventions can carry risk of significant harms, including infertility / sterility, sexual dysfunction, impaired bone density accrual, adverse cognitive impacts, cardiovascular diseases, and metabolic disorders, psychiatric disorders, surgical complications, and regret. Meanwhile, systematic reviews of the evidence have revealed deep uncertainty about the purported benefits of these interventions. The researchers, who have remained unnamed for the time being, found that the existing studies used to support medical intervention for gender dysphoric youth are rife with methodological errors and bias, and fail to diagnose potential harms, including infertility and the, quote, loss of sexual function, unquote. In colloquial terms, this means minors receiving gender-affirming care could lose the ability to have children or function sexually before being old enough to drive or vote. Their conclusions echo those of the UK's CAS review, which resulted in a ban on puberty blockers for minors. The review analyzed 17 systematic reviews, including reviews on puberty blockers, surgical intervention, cross-sex hormones, psychotherapy, and, quote, social transition, unquote, and concluded on page 8 of the executive summary that, quote, the evidence for benefit of pediatric medical transition is very uncertain, while the evidence for harm is less uncertain. When medical interventions pose unnecessary, disproportionate risks of harm, healthcare providers should refuse to offer them, even when they are preferred, requested, or demanded by patients. Failure to do so increases the risk of iatrogenic harm and reduces medicine to consumerism, threatening the integrity of the profession and undermining trust in medical authority. Unquote. And it goes on, so saying that research backing up these drastic interventions is full of holes. And it says, for example, although the public testimonies of, quote, detransitioners, unquote, those who have undergone these treatments and deeply regretted them have been prominent in the political debate, there is very little evidence available on the pervasiveness or lack thereof of regret post-transition. And it goes on, there's a good deal more to this article, but just to sum it all up, there just isn't much evidence, and they are going with these drastic procedures with little or no medical evidence to back them up. All right, and that again was from LifeSite News. Bombshell HHS report confirms the irreversible harm caused by child gender transitions. And it appeared Thursday, May 1st of this year. Now, here we have something else from Slate News, another medical thing. This should be a warning to all of us. All of us have to do one simple thing every minute of every day, and that's breathe. This came from Slate News, May 1st, by Frank Bergman, and it says, Canadian government begins testing inhaled COVID mRNA, quote, Arovax, unquote. The Canadian government has begun ramping up testing for a chilling new COVID mRNA Arovax, that's the name in quotes, A-E-R-O-V-I-X, and that seeks to overcome vaccine hesitancy by using aerosols to, quote, vaccinate, unquote, the general public. And every time they use the word vaccines here, as we've seen several times in the past, they put it in quotes because these mRNA things are not traditional vaccines. They don't provide you surefire immunity. They don't prevents you from getting the disease. The makers claim that they will reduce the severity of the symptoms, but it's quite well known they do not provide a surefire immunity from the disease. So, with that in mind, I won't keep saying, quote, vaccines, but it's there. Unlike traditional vaccines that are deployed using injections, the new Arovax is an atomized spray that is inhaled. The new vaccines are sprayed in aerosol form and breathed in by recipients. The Arovax was developed by researchers at the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. Oh, how about that? Those are my words, of course. Let me start that again. The Arovax was developed by researchers at the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, funded McMaster University in Canada. According to researchers, the Canadian government's Institutes of Health Research, CIHR, has now invested $8 million in taxpayer funding into the Arovax project as scientists prepare for the next round of clinical tests. The scientists developing the experimental Serova, S-E-R-O-V-A, COVID mRNA vaccine insist that it will be administered as a nasal spray. However, the development of inhaled vaccines could allow the large numbers of people to be vaccinated at once if the Arovax were sprayed into the atmosphere. If the Arovax were deployed atmospherically, it could vaccinate entire towns and cities at once, bypassing individual consent. Populations could be vaccinated without their knowledge under such a scheme. These concerns have been previously raised by multiple experts amid the ongoing push to develop inhaled vaccines. And here's a quote. When you put the pieces of the puzzle together, a disturbing picture emerges, says Dr. Joseph McCullough. He warned about that when the technology first emerged in 2023, so a couple years back. Soy News first reported on the inhaled mRNA vaccines in 2023 when it began its Phase 1 trials. Following an initial study of mice, the results led researchers to declare that this, quote, new method of delivery could radically change the way people are vaccinated, unquote. Well, I certainly would agree with that statement. The article goes on to say the first human trial saw 36 people participate in the experiment. According to researchers, there were no severe side effects from the Phase 1 trials. Researchers are now rapidly advancing Phase 2 trials. They are in active recruitment for 350 volunteers for the randomized double-blind trials. A total of 75% of the participants will get the real version of the real vaccine, while the rest will get placebos. And jumping down now, according to McMaster, and let's see now. Did we say who McMaster was? Let me check that back again now. Oh, that's the name of the university. Yes, according to McMaster, preclinical trials in animals have already shown that, quote, the inhaled aerosol vaccine is far more effective at inducing protective immune responses than traditional injections. McMaster claims this is due to an inhaled version of the vaccine targeting the upper airways where respiratory viruses first enter the body. Meanwhile, the U.S. Food and Drug Administration has granted fast-track designation. This is a little, now, where have you heard that before? Oh, the old mRNA stuff from Moderna and Pfizer. They were given fast-track, too, weren't they? But reading on, meanwhile, the U.S. Food and Drug Administration, FDA, has granted fast-track designation for a new self-amplifying Replicon, that's a word in quotes, so that's a title, R-E-P-L-I-C-O-N, a Replicon mRNA vaccine to supposedly tackle the H5N1 influenza A virus, that is bird flu. The fast track was awarded to Arcturus Therapeutics, a Bill Gates-funded company specializing in mRNA-based pharmaceuticals. For its, and it gives a technical name here, for its ARCT-2304 mRNA vaccine. One of Arcturus Therapeutics' senior advisors, former CDC and FDA official Dr. Peter A. Patriarca, also advises the Gates Foundation. As Sling News has previously reported, the self-amplifying or replicon mRNA shots contain the equipment needed to make more of itself once it enters cells. The injections have been dubbed replicon vaccines because they are able to replicate inside the human body to produce more mRNA over time. The new technology has provoked a worldwide backlash from experts and concerned citizens. Yet, despite widespread concerns about the new vaccines, federal health officials are rushing the development of the new replicon injections. Well, that doesn't sound good to me. That means the day may come when I take a deep breath, I'm getting vaccinated. And the same with all of you. So we better keep a sharp eye on that. Okay, now, I believe it was last week I had read a little bit about Senator Johnson, Ron Johnson, saying there might be new hearings on the 9/11 attacks, September 11th. Now, that was 2001, and here it is, 2025. 24 years have elapsed. But like the John F. Kennedy assassination, this just doesn't disappear, the interest in it and the shock. And here we have something that was sent to me by one of our faithful listeners up in Massachusetts. This appeared in the Boston Herald. And I want to thank him. He has sent us a great many things. And while I think of it, I want to thank this listener who has been very diligent. He sends me many, many, many good articles from the Boston Herald and often the New York Post, occasionally some other publications. And another listener in Massachusetts tipped me off to some and sent me some sample legal statements. And I had not noticed these before. I see them all the time in my local little newspaper. Sometimes it seems like a third of the paper is devoted to all these legal things, and it will say things like, anyone interested in the estate of so-and-so, or anyone interested in such-and-such. I've never read them much, but she has, this person, and diligently has observed some of the things that are going on behind the scenes, power grabs and such, and I'll get into those more next week. There's just so much we could do. There just aren't enough hours to give you all the information, but I'll try and give you some of the things. Now, following up on Senator Johnson's statement about hearings on 9/11, even after 24 years, here is a article that appeared in the Boston Herald April 27th, 2025, by Joe Dwinell, entitled, Families Plan Protest at FBI Headquarters After New Video to Air. More evidence of alleged Saudi ties to the 9/11 terror attacks will blow the lid off, that's in quotes, blow the lid off the lawsuit against the kingdom, one of the plaintiffs tells the Herald. 60 Minutes is set to air tonight. Well, that's already taken place now. And I have a little follow-up in a separate article. 60 Minutes is set to air tonight, its take on the footage and related evidence that reportedly links Saudi Arabian officials to some of the September 11, 2001 hijackers. And that's been rumored for a long time. In fact, there was a big chunk of the so-called official report on 9/11 that was classified for many years, and I haven't heard a lot about it. Maybe it was a little more tame than a lot of people thought it would be. But here's something really new, and it says that 60 Minutes is set to air this tonight. Now, that would have been, once again, April 27th was the date this was published in the Boston Herald. So, 60 Minutes is set to air tonight. It's taken the footage, and related evidence reportedly links Saudi Arabian officials to some of the September 11th attacks. Saudi officials have denied any involvement, and a lawsuit against the nation is before a Manhattan judge right now. Brett Eagleson, who was 15 years old when his dad, Bruce, died when the Twin Towers collapsed in New York City, said his group fighting the Saudis in court are planning to protest outside the FBI headquarters in Washington, D.C., Monday, to demand action. Enough is enough. It's unacceptable. We've waited 23 years for anything to happen, Eagleson said. We want everything related to 9/11 to be declassified. He said the head of the FBI, Kash Patel, has promised to unearth all the evidence, and now is the time. Eagleson said 60 Minutes will air video that allegedly shows a Saudi suspect, quote, casing the Capitol, unquote, in the summer of 1999, pointing out where Congress sits. Eagleson also says a companion sketchbook painstakingly shows, quote, an aviator's algorithm on how to hit a target on the horizon when flying a plane. Well, there's much more than this, and we just don't have time to do it all. But I did want to very quickly get my little cell phone out here and mention a follow-up to this. So bear with me for just a minute here while I bring this up. This was from, I believe, CBS News. And it will give us a little more late-breaking information. And you can find this if you have a smartphone or a computer with internet capability. Just type in a search for 9/11 attack. That's all you need to put, 9/11 attack, and hit the news button at the top. And the second one down, at least on my phone, says, CBS News recently surfaced 9/11 evidence was not shared with FBI field agents or top intelligence officials. Now, why does that sound familiar? Oh, the JFK assassination, where much of the evidence that the CIA had was never shared with the FBI or the Warren Commission. But now, this little article from CBS News, and do we have a date on this? Let me check this. Almost dropped the phone there, so that gives a little challenge. Bear with me, please. And we have, if the phone will go upright again, let me see now. Oh, this is interesting. One of the sponsors is Pfizer. How about that? But, yeah, the date was April 27th. It was updated. Now, here's what they say. Evidence, and the phone is giving me a hard time again. Let me see if I can get this. It's trying to show me an ad for some pretty beach somewhere. Evidence has emerged that could change our understanding of the 9/11 terrorist attacks more than two decades ago. It was turned over to the FBI in the weeks after 9/11, but our reporting has uncovered it was never shared with the Bureau's own field agents or top intelligence officials. Why, after all these years, is this crucial information just surfacing? The evidence is coming to light as part of a long-running lawsuit against the Saudi government by the families of the nearly 3,000 people killed in the attacks. And it includes a chilling video, this is what the other article referred to, of a Saudi national filming the U.S. Capitol. A voice on the video says in Arabic, "I am transmitting these scenes to you from the heart of the American capital, Washington," unquote. This video, recorded in the summer of 1999, was unsealed in federal court last year as part of the 9/11 family's lawsuit accusing Saudi Arabia of providing crucial support to the hijackers. Exhibit A in that case, the man who made the video, Omar El Bayoumi, B-A-Y-O-U-M-I, or Bayoumi, who asked a bystander to film him in front of the Capitol. The FBI says Bayoumi was living in the United States on a student visa and being paid by a Saudi aviation company in California, despite not showing up for classes or work. Investigators say, in fact, Bayoumi was an operative of the Saudi intelligence service and had close ties to two of the hijackers. The video was filmed over several days. Bayoumi recorded entrances and exits of the Capitol, security posts, a model of the building, and nearby landmarks. Bayoumi points out the Washington Monument and says, "I will get over there and report to you in detail what is there." Well, time doesn't permit us to go beyond that, but that article, again, you can access by just simply putting in 9/11 attack on the on a search and pick the tab or whatever you call that that says news. And at least on my phone, the second choice down is the CBS report. So if you're interested in getting more, that's the place to find it. And the report by one of the survivors' sons, and not survivors, one of the victims' sons of 9/11, was in, again, the Boston Herald on that same date, April 27th. All right, something a little different now from Fox News. Headline says, Trump says he'll revoke Harvard's tax-exempt status. Well, I think we covered that a little bit last week, so I won't go into that in great depth. This was dated May 2nd, 2025, by Greg Norman of Fox News. Do have an interesting quote here. The founder of an organization called Stop Antisemitism says that Harvard University has become the nation's anti-Semitic cesspool epicenter. And it goes on to describe some things that the president said about Harvard. I don't think I would totally disagree with what he said, namely that it has become a woke institute and a source of anti-Semitism, that they have taken no action. You can bet if people had been criticizing some other group, LGBTQ, for example, there would have been big action by the university. But no, you can criticize Christians, Jews, maybe Muslims. I'm not so sure about that. But here's Trump's words, a little bit humorous. I'll just read this one couple of paragraphs. This is what Trump said. Quote, Harvard has been hiring almost all woke, radical left idiots and bird brains who are only capable of teaching failure to students and so-called future leaders. Trump wrote that on Social Truth, which I guess is a website. He went on, look just to the recent past at their plagiarizing president, who so greatly embarrassed Harvard before the United States Congress. Many others, like these leftist dopes, are teaching at Harvard, and because of that, Harvard can no longer be considered even a decent place of learning, and should not be considered on any list of the world's great universities or colleges, the president continued. He also said, Harvard is a joke, teaches hate and stupidity, and should no longer receive federal funds. And, of course, Harvard has been up in arms because they're talking billions of dollars. This is not small potatoes. They're talking big money. So Harvard is making a big, well, I guess you would call it a federal case out of it, a big lawsuit, and we will see how that comes out. All right, a little different topic, just a little interesting thing. It doesn't really give us too much explanation of all this, but I think it's worth reading anyway. This is also from Fox News, April 22nd, by Andrea Margolis. Andrea Margolis. Archaeologists unexpectedly uncover hundreds of skeletons, medieval church beneath university campus. Hundreds of skeletons were recently uncovered by archaeologists while they were excavating a British university's property. The discovery, a complete surprise. The skeletons, along with an ancient church, were found on the school's city campus property, acquired by the university in 2021. The University of Gloucestershire announced the discovery in an April 11th press release. The city campus property, which formerly housed a department store, is expected to open this year. The university commissioned the archaeological organization Cotswold Archaeology to excavate the location. And it was in this area that the medieval church was found. The ruined structure was identified as St. Aldate's Church, which was demolished in the mid-1650s. It dated back to the Middle Ages. The excavators found, quote, limestone and brick foundations along with around 83 brick-lined burial vaults, both within the church itself and in the associated burial ground, according to the press release. And here's another quote. Approximately 150 post-medieval burials, not contained in burial vaults, were identified in the courtyard, the statement continues. And it went on, deeper excavations revealed about 170 earlier burials, the majority of which are provisionally thought to relate to the medieval church. The discovery came as a complete shock to archaeologists who were unaware of the church or its burying ground. The vaults were cleared in the 1950s to make way for the area where the former D. Benham's department store was built. And here's a quote, a new parish church on or near the site of the medieval one was constructed in the mid-18th century. Cotswold Archaeology Acting Principal Manager Steve Sheldon said in a statement. He went on, the letter survived until the early 1960s, when it was demolished to make way for the department store. Well, interesting. And maybe we'll hear more about that later. Now, from LifeSite News, Quebec Court recognizes throubles and continuing push to redefine families. This was Friday, May 2nd, 2025, by Jonathan Van Maren. It seems that scarcely a month goes by in Canada without yet another court decision highlighting our ongoing, decades-long cultural collapse. I believe that Jonathan is based in Canada. Last week it was a scintillating headline, quote, Ontario must pay for surgery to give trans resident both penis and vagina. That's from the appeal court, unquote. The Canadian taxpayer, as it turns out, is on the hook pay for a trans-identifying man to possess both male and female genitalia. This week there is the headline from CTV, multiple parent families like throuples to be granted legal rights in Quebec. A throuple, for those of you who are still unaware, is when three people get together and create a sexual trio. As I have reported before, people who make up these sexual clusters have been pushing for legal recognition for some time. The ruling came from a Quebec Superior Court judge who stated that multi-parent families should have the same rights as any other unit. By unit, the court refers to the natural family, a father, mother, and their children. Because some adults seek other sexual arrangements, however, these terms have been progressively unharnessed. From their biological definitions, and now mean whatever activists in Canadian courts decide they mean. And I'll just jump down a little bit here. The case involved three groups, a throuple of a man and two women who had, quote, four children among them, unquote. A lesbian couple who had conceived with the assistance of a male sperm donor who wanted to be a father figure, and a woman living with infertility who allowed her husband to have a child with a friend who asked to remain on as a mother, unquote. And the author says, I'm not sure what remain on means in that context. But this court case is a perfect microcosm of what occurs when we cut ourselves loose from any standard of objective morality and reject the natural family. And the lawyer who is, like, I guess you'd call it the plaintiff in this case, stated the ruling was essentially another victory for LGBT rights. And he speaks of the law evolving, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And, well, those are the main points of that article. I think we'll stop there for that one. Then we have, on a religious theme, and the other one, by the way, was from LifeSite News, Friday, May 2nd. This one is from LifeSite News, Monday, April 28th, by Emily Mancia-Racina. Netflix restores Isaiah quote to Passion of the Christ film after backlash over its removal. Netflix restored an Old Testament prophecy about the Messiah to Mel Gibson's film, The Passion of the Christ, after heated backlash over its removal. The original version of the film opens with a display of the words of the prophet Isaiah, written 700 years before Christ. Those words say, He was wounded for our transgressions, crushed for our iniquities. By his wounds we are healed, unquote. Again, that's from Isaiah 53. Netflix had posted a film version that erased the scripture passage, substituting the opening with a conspicuous 13-second display of a blank screen. The news of the film cut triggered outrage, with various social media and Christian commentators going on to highlight and denounce the omission. Publicity over the scripture cut seems to have begun to spread when a Catholic wife, known as Cassie, announced it April 14th on X. LifeSite News reported on the omission on April 15th, drawing attention to the fact that the Isaiah 53 is seen as the Old Testament passage that most clearly points to Jesus Christ as the long-awaited Messiah of the Jews, as shown on LSN TV, or that would be LifeSite News TV. Israeli Jews interviewed on the street were surprised when informed that Isaiah 53 is taken from the Old Testament. At least half a dozen of them thought it was from the New Testament, with one young man pointing out that it sounds like it refers to Jesus Christ. Quote, you hear this passage, you know it's talking about Jesus, whether you believe he's the Messiah or not. That's precisely why it was so powerful for Mel Gibson to have put it at the start of The Passion of the Christ. And that's a quote from LifeSite News Editor-in-Chief John Henry Weston. Backlash intensified by Holy Thursday, April 17th. That day, conservative commentator Benny Johnson drew attention on X to the cut by Netflix, declaring, quote, you can't silence the truth. Christ is king, unquote. Several people said in response that they would cancel the Netflix subscriptions because of the omission. Some tagged Netflix's X account as they vented their outrage. LifeSite News confirmed that the quote was still omitted as of the night of April 17th, Holy Thursday. The next day, Good Friday, it was restored. And those of you that are familiar with the Bible know that a large part of the whole chapter, Isaiah 53, is unmistakably about Jesus Christ, even though, as it says in this article, it was written by Isaiah 700 years before the birth of Christ. And again, this was from LifeSite News, Monday, April 28th. Netflix restores Isaiah quote to Passion of the Christ film after backlash over its removal. Well, we just have a few minutes left. Here are a few headlines that Brother Bruce of American Prophecy was kind enough to send. Just a couple for now. WHO insider warns Gates plotting Polaris virus to slaughter millions of kids. I only have the headline here, but I think I will have to try and get this article. This appeared in the peoplesvoice.tv on April 14th by Baxter Dimitri. And I will have to take a look at this. I only have about one sentence of the article here, so I'll see if I can't get some more of this. Bill Gates and his cronies of the World Health Organization have been caught red-handed targeting the most vulnerable, our kids, our young people. So I'll have to look into that and get some more details. And now we have Ursula von der Leyen cozies up to China as desperate EU makes major concessions. This was by Richard Ashmore, Sunday, April 13th, by express.co.uk, British website. And the introduction says, Europe is on the brink of looking east rather than west for help as leaders cozy up to China for trade deals rather than American President Donald Trump. Euronews reports the first person European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen picked up the phone to was China after President Trump delivered his now famous reciprocal tariff speech at the White House earlier this month. Again, that was from express.co.uk by Richard Ashmore. Ursula von der Leyen cozies up to China, etc. Then we have something else I've been meaning to do for a couple weeks, but it's a longer one, and I need to summarize it, so I will get to that next week, but I'll whet your appetites. From LifeSite News, it says CIA mind control never ended. It evolved and it went mainstream. By James Corbett, April 18th, 2025. Well, the time goes by all too fast. Again, if you'd like to write to me, send a donation, simply write. Give us your opinions about the program or about the topics. You can write to me at Lou Caverly, C-A-V-E-R-L-Y, at Post Office Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland. Zip is 21609. Lou Caverly, Post Office Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609. And don't forget, if you want a copy of our book that Elizabeth and I wrote while she was still living, we still have a few left. We'll give it to you for free if you just write to us. Thank you for listening, and tune in again next week. Good night.